Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Spoilers for HBO's The Last of Us. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of The Script Department. I'm John. I'm joined today by Caleb to discuss episodes 4, 5 and 6 of HBO's The Last of Us. Before we get into that, if you haven't already, do subscribe to our YouTube channel, subscribe to our social media platforms where you can get TikTok videos and all that kind of smaller short form content as well. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Just search for The Script Department for daily episodes like this. Be sure to visit our website, thescriptdepartment.net, where you can check out all the different stuff that our global community of screenwriters are up to. And you can buy us a coffee as well if you want to support the channel. Hit the link in the description. Okay, Caleb, episodes 4, 5, and 6. We have two episodes in Kansas City, not Pittsburgh, Kansas, for some reason. I want to ask your opinion about why you think they changed that. I'm curious. I can't figure it out. I'm trying to wonder, is it a geographical reason? But we'll get to that. And then we have episode 6, where we are in Jackson with Tommy in Wyoming. And yeah, really beautiful spectacle episodes, I think. You know, harking back to, I think, the magic of episode 2, where you're getting, you know, the remnants of Boston and all that. I really felt like I was immersed in this universe way more than I was previous. Really loved episodes 1, 2, and 3 with Billstown and all that, but I felt like this was a real chance, a change of scenery in more ways than one, you know, and I really appreciate that. I thought there was great tension in episodes 4 and 5, the Kansas City episodes. I love that it was a two-parter. They didn't rush that. They let that breathe. I love that they worked hard to make us care about Sam and Henry. And I think the payoff at the end of that, as tragic as it is, was just a really, really great example. I wasn't so keen on episode 6, though, I have to say. I felt that I love the back and forth between Tommy and Joel. Mm-hmm. I love the back and forth between Maria and Ellie, Tommy's wife.
Yeah.
I thought all of that was really well done. And I love that they didn't show us the dam. I think you were a fan of that, too, I think, from our messages. You weren't that we actually got to see the world that we see in The Last of Us Part 2, which is great. Okay. I don't feel that they nailed or even came close to nailing the emotional weight of that argument that we get between Joel and Ellie. You know, I've lost people too. You have no idea what loss is. Some of the great lines that come out of this game. And I come out of this show as well. I don't feel they landed. I felt like it was trying to shoehorn a scene from one version of the story into a different version where it hadn't been earned. And I want to get into that first, and then we can kind of discuss the other episodes, because I think that was the big writing, like we're screenwriters, from a screenwriting point of view. I thought that was the big misstep. And the reason why I think it's a really interesting point to kind of discuss here is because I actually think that Henry and Sam's story and the adaptation, the measures that Craig Mazin took to adapt Henry and Sam's story, because you never get any backstory about Henry and Sam in the game. It's just two people moving through the city, just like Joel and Ellie. The lengths they took with Henry and Sam, for me, were an example of what they should have done with Joel and Ellie to get us to the big payoff at the end of episode 6. Right?
Yeah.
How did you feel about Henry and Sam? and the kind of adaptation of their characters. And how did you feel then also about the way in which that argument unfolds? I wonder your thoughts on both of those scenes. Yeah. Two different scenes, completely different contexts and so on, but they are connected by virtue of the fact that one is an adaptation in the true sense. One is a copy and paste.
Yeah. With Sam, I think that there's like they talked about the update of making him deaf, making Sam deaf, and how that's a form of him needing to rely on Henry even more than he does in the game. And so I think that's a great adaptation of that character to farther the narrative or the film medium, you know. And so like to really give us an understanding very simply of this this way of living in this apocalyptic world where hearing is a very survival, like a way of surviving that we would use or that we use. I like that a lot. That really, and it for someone so young to be dealing with all of this in the world is really gives you a visceral like feeling, a very very quick off the bat, you know. Jumping to Ellie and Joel's conversation, they keeping it the same and treating that scene as a very sacred text may not have been the best, like you were saying, because now it's just another version of the same thing that doesn't really build upon itself at all. Whereas for me, that scene with Joel and Tommy, where he expresses his fear, like we finally get what's going on behind like his looks at Ellie and like into
the panic attacks.
Yeah, the panic. Stuff, yeah. Which also those panic attacks for me they felt a little whenever they started coming in episode 6 felt a little I don't know if I'd say unearned, but just maybe it's the way that it's done, like we've seen it before, but getting that scene where they're actually sitting down and talking, especially given what's the conversation and like the boiling over of Tommy and Joel already, and then to like come for them to come back and then Joel finally say what's, because isn't that, you know, that's what the subtext, that's what we as writers love about subtext, is like having the, you know, like we don't want the answers, we want it to the actor to say it but they don't say it, you know. Or the, you know, the script to say it and not say it.
It's literally subtextual. It is not on the surface.
We want it out, you know. Like as a viewer, like we want it to come out, and so that whenever it finally does, it's like this release. And so I got that with that scene of Joel and Tommy, where he finally says I'm scared, because like I felt like I fully understood that sentiment and that character, and finally earning that because of the subtlety that they've tried to do with Joel's character so far. So then to write come off of that scene into the Joel and Ellie scene, I think that overshadowed it a little bit for me too. So I was still thinking about that scene, and then that scene was happening and I wasn't really in it, you know. Because I think too, and you'll have to remind me if this is what happens in the game, but the way that it sets up Ellie having heard that conversation with Tommy, we only see her walking and then it in the town, and then it cuts away and we don't know she heard.
Yeah.
And so I felt like there was some I wouldn't call them contrivance, but
it's very it is contrived. It is very contrived. You don't have to you don't have to apologize for that. It is very contrived. She is, like, of all the shacks in all the shanty towns in all the post-apocalyptic countries, you know, in this story, she had to walk past the one where they're having the conversation about leaving Ellie behind at that moment where they're leaving Ellie behind. Like, it's really contrived. Don't apologize for it.
Well, and I guess, like, now thinking deeper into it, but, like, I guess the other part of that, too, is she leaves the movie theater to go look for Joel, but we have no understanding of, like, why she's just like, oh, I should go look for Joel, right?
Yes.
Unless you can remind me of something, but...
No, there's no reason. So, and I assumed it was going to be... Because they show at the beginning a girl watching her, and she's like, what the fuck do you want? You know, and that kind of thing. And they're like, whoa, 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 manners, you know? And I assumed she was going... That teenager was going to come back and say, hey, you want to hang out, or maybe she was going to lure her away because, like, out of desperation, have a friend that she might just follow her and be led to a bunch of other kids. And we might get this wonderful moment where she's with people her own age again for a brief period. I thought there might be something interesting there. What does it say about her feelings for Joel then as a father figure to her that she would choose him over the kids her own age, you know, that kind of stuff. And I thought there was something. I thought they were going to play with the idea, like, I don't want to do this mission anymore. Like, because in the game, they never explore the idea that Ellie is not devoted. She is 100% devoted to going there and fulfilling her role as being this potential vaccine. And I thought, oh, this is good. They're going to tease us. Because in Tommy's Dam, you're not going to be getting any enticement. But in the town of Jackson, there is this seductive quality. We can live here and we can have a normal life. You can have friends again. And it's not going to be get up at 6 a.m. and make your bed like we see in the Fedra place in episode seven. You know, this can be a safe community, a safe and welcoming community for you. And they just don't do that. And instead, it is, as you say, random. Sorry, go on.
That was my full thought.
I think Joel and Tommy's relationship in this is more nurtured than Joel and Ellie's relationship in this episode. I don't mean in the whole show, but I mean just in this episode, they put more attention on Tommy and Joel than they do on Joel and Ellie. And yet Joel and Ellie is the big talking point in this because it's that famous scene, right? And if you've never played the games before, that scene where Tommy comes in and says, do you have any idea how much your life means to people, you know, and all that. And like she's saying, you know, is this all kids have to worry about, you know, what clothes to wear and, you know, what you're going to do Saturday night or whatever, you know. And it is line for line, beat for beat, the exact same scene. And the way you described it, you know, it is this hallowed scene, like the way Sarah's death is almost beat for beat exactly as it plays out, shot for shot. There are certain scenes, even in the car, when they're driving in the car and she's looking at the magazine, she throws the magazine out the window. It is beat for beat, line for line. There are certain scenes, certain trailer moments in The Last of Us video game that have, it's almost like it was written into the contract that these are scenes that cannot be rewritten in any way, shape or form. Okay, that's fine. Great. Sometimes they work, but this didn't work. They did not earn that scene. If this had never been a game and Neil Druckmann was writing this episode of television as is, I don't think he would have written that scene in the same way. I think he would have had a different vision for how that argument would go. Because in the game, you have, and this isn't about in the game they do it better. This is simply in the game, they allow that argument to breathe. They allow that tension to rise. What happens in the game is that they're at a dam. They're trying to fix a dam. Tommy's there. Maria's there. And Ellie says, look, you stay with Maria. I'm going to go talk to Tommy. Ellie's offended by that. This is the first time you've left me alone since we, or you've left me with people that aren't, you know, since we've met. And it's been like 6 months in the game at that point or whatever. And so it's like, you know, 7 months or something like that. It's been a long time. She's weary. She finds out about Sarah. She finds out Tommy's going to be taking over. And she gets on a horse. She steals a horse and she runs away, basically. And they have to ride out to find her. And they get ambushed by a bunch of raiders. And they make their way through, you know, up these country roads. And they eventually find a cottage. And she's in there and she's reading the diary. So when Joel gets in there, he's already pissed off. He's already wound up. And he's like, do you have any idea? Like when he says that, do you have any idea how much your life means? Like he is pissed off. And she gives him back talk and he back talks to her and she gets up and she pushing him and he's saying, you know, I'm not your daughter and I'm not your father and you're not my daughter, right? And these are like cruel things to say to somebody. But he's saying it because he's getting more and more worked up the whole time. He doesn't just snap on a whim. Like he doesn't snap anyway, but he like, you know, it's everybody's escalating their tensions in equal measure, I think. But
yeah,
escalating their tempers in equal measure. But it's not just this thing that goes off in his head. He's already been wound up and pissed off by the fact that you risk my life, you risk Tommy's life, you risk your own life. And this, and you know, a potential vaccine because what you're pissed off, you know, that I'm leaving you and you ran away, you know? And so it makes sense that the argument gets to that point. And then the cool down period is also important because they don't just resolve their issues straight away. They are interrupted by another raiding party coming in and they have to defend themselves again. And so the argument is cut short. And then what happens is they end up riding off and it's presumably like an hour since they've had their argument. By the time they get to the lookout where they can see the university in the distance or the city in the distance. And Tommy says, well, I'll take it from here. And Joel says, actually, I'm going to borrow your horse if you don't mind. And so there's a suitable level of build. There's a suitable cool down period. And they're stronger moving forward because of that. Okay. Now that is helped because of gameplay. But it is also helped because of the pacing of how this all unfolds in terms of the narrative. In the show, it is literally, she comes out of the cinema, they're in a random shack somewhere, and she overhears them at that right moment. She goes back to the house, and the next morning he finds her, and he finds that she's sulking. And that's all that's happening in this, is she's just grumpy because it's like, you know, she's coming off as grumpy and sulking rather than like betrayed, you know?
Yeah.
And it just feels like, okay, now we got to hit play on that scene from the game rather than giving us this thing. The reason why I mention Sam and Henry is they created an antagonist in that whole two episodes so that Henry and Sam would feel like more than just wanderers or nomads. Yes. And they gave Henry and Sam this wonderful backstory of you know, where it's this big brother fighting to protect his smaller brother. When my younger brother was diagnosed with disease, I had to do these things in order to get the cure, you know? And it's just, or, I wasn't able to get the cure. You can understand the point of view of these people. It's so rewarding. And even though we know where it's going to go, we hope, like I was praying, don't let them play out the way it plays out previously, because actually I really love these characters now more than I do in the game.
Yeah.
They realize if you want us to feel the loss of Henry and Sam, you got to make us care about Henry and Sam. So they didn't give two episodes to get through Kansas. They gave us two episodes to make us care about Henry and Sam.
And the whole first episode, pretty much until the end, we only hear of Henry.
Yeah. It's all mythology. Yeah. It's all back. It's all ground. It's all building. And so there's just this great, it's giving attention where it's putting their focus and their energy into the places where it's needed. And I think the mistake they made with that scene was they assumed everybody loves that scene in the game. It must be a perfect scene in and of its own right. No. A great scene works in relation to the scenes around it.
Yeah.
And you got to do better than just remind us of that scene, you know? I think they dropped the ball there in a big way. Great that the actors were able to, you know, bring that scene to life. Again, this is not a criticism of the actors. It's not a criticism. I think they're nailing it.
Yeah.
But I think that was the biggest drop of the ball, so to speak, of the whole show to date.
I think it comes off a little melodramatic, like instead of the complexity of the scene that you're talking about from the game, that we get in the game. And so, yeah, I think it.
I almost felt, I was like, why are you getting so mad at her?
Yeah.
You know, that's what it felt like. I was like, I know why you're snapping, because in the game, you're snapping. In the game, he snaps.
Yeah.
But outside of that, it doesn't make sense, you know? And I'm not at all insinuating that he is a danger to Ellie in any way. He's not, you know? But, you know, he clearly shows his heart is breaking because of Ellie. He's so worried about her. But it just feels like, dude, calm down, you know? She has every right to be anxious about being handed off to this other person. She has literally been referred to as cargo in this story by you, you know? So, that's kind of my feeling on the whole thing. Just to say, if you hear a child in the background, we do have a baby in the recording studio. So let's talk about Kansas City. Why do you think they changed Pittsburgh to Kansas City? You're an American. My geography of America is okay, but not amazing. Is there a geographical reason, do you think? Or because I have a feeling where they're going is still the same, if memory serves.
Yeah.
Why do you think they changed that?
So I think it's geographical. I wonder if, I feel like they've really sat down. You know, we talked about this with the adaptation of the virus. And I think they just sat down and they looked and drew it out and were like, this is the most logical one. And because also I think they pushed Wyoming forward. And so I think they're like, well, we need to end up in Wyoming.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Kansas City is probably smaller than Pittsburgh is. In terms of like the size of the downtown area and stuff. So like you may be getting Pittsburgh is more.
I wonder
what we're getting in the game.
In the game, we never really feel like we're being specifically hunted. It just feels like we encounter people along the way and they just want to kill us, you know? Yeah. In this, it is like we are being hunted. Henry and Sam are being hunted. And I feel like I wonder, is it partly, if Kansas City is a smaller city than Pittsburgh, I don't know, so I'm just guessing, but if it is, then maybe it's more feasible for them to have hunting parties out there looking for, you know what I mean? Maybe that's part of it. You can't have a place too small because they get caught. You can't have a place too big because they just disappear.
Yeah. I think Pittsburgh is probably more of a tense environment than Kansas City. In real life too. I don't see any reason for them to switch it other than geographical.
I wonder, is it they just drew a map? But then I also thought they probably drew a map in the other game when they were making the game as well, surely. Anyway,
One of the points that I was thinking about with the show overall but with these episodes is the way that like the story is structured. I think it's interesting that if we look at the way that they've done episode 3 and then now episode 7 coming up. So Bill, and then Left Behind is our next episode. It's interesting because the way that The Last of Us Part 1 of the video game is structured is very linear. Like if I remember correctly, there's the first scene with Sarah and before the the break outbreak. And then from there on, it's pretty much all linear, correct? And so I think there's getting into Last of Us Part Two, the way we're seeing a similar structure to the way that The Last of Us Part Two is structured.
Yeah.
Where we're getting these flashbacks or side stories, not fully contained to just Joel's character, where The Last of Us Part One is, we talked about this last episode, but is fully from Joel's perspective because we are Joel. And so I wonder if that also undercuts the scene with Joel and Ellie at the end of episode six, the scene in question that we're talking about, because we aren't in the game. We're in Joel's perspective. We are thinking at all times about Sarah because we are traumatized by that, you know, especially initially playing the video game, not knowing what we were expecting or not knowing what to expect.
Yeah.
And to just be emotionally wrecked by that. And then to immediately connect with Joel as the player. We haven't thought of that idea that Ellie brings up, which is a cult, like a very harsh wake up call as you play the game, where it's like everyone's lost someone, which also speaks to the.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The depth of the game to recognize at that moment, you know, to recognize like, oh, wow, this is building the world of like everyone has lost someone. Everyone has their own backstory, all this. So to then jump over to the show, we already know everyone's lost someone. And so it kind of undercuts that notion of where we're just thinking about Joel. We're being selfish just like Joel is. And because of this point of view that the show has given us, especially with like all the cutaways and the cold opens and stuff like that, I think that for me is what is, I'm not fully connected to Joel and just Joel alone, which is for me what makes the first video game so powerful, yeah. Perfect. So yeah.
Just you made a point there about Sarah. One thing that I really feel was missed in this in episode six was the picture of Sarah. And this is not a case of, oh, they did what they should have done, what was in the game. The word Sarah on a chalkboard as a kind of a makeshift memorial, which is, by the way, a pretty crappy memorial. If I can just say that, you know, you live in this very prosperous community with a Christmas tree outside. You can do better than a little chalkboard with two names carved in, written into it with chalk. It isn't like a tree with like a heart.
A permanent thing.
Yeah, it isn't a tattoo. God's sake. Anyway, that really annoyed me because
it's made to be erased.
Yes, exactly. It is going to get erased just through time. Anyway. It is the worst memorial. Anyway, it's so contrived because it's like, Maria, I'm sorry for your loss for both your children. And then she says, well, no, only one of them is mine, you know, and it's correction, you know. And I said, the other one was Tommy's niece. And it's just like so ham-fisted about how she finds out. It's like if she had never, whereas in the game, it's here's a picture of Tommy, Joel, and Ellie back in the day, or not even Tommy, just Joel and Ellie back in the day as this love, you know, as this family, you know, this tight-knit family. And it's...
You mean Sarah, but...
Oh, sorry, what did I say?
Yeah, you said Ellie.
Oh, sorry.
Obviously Ellie.
Joel and Sarah. Joel weren't, it's this picture of it's this picture of Joel and Sarah back in the day, this tight-knit family, and it's just perfect. And it is such a reminder, visceral reminder for the audience of the person we lost early, because we are supposed to feel that loss, right? We are supposed to feel like we lost somebody in this show if we're supposed to be stepping into the shoes of Joel. And we do. It's incredibly powerful, but her name is never invoked again until we see it on a chalkboard. And it's it just felt like a picture wouldn't have hurt. You know, the idea that Tommy went back to Texas one year, and he found this back in the old house. It's like this treasured thing. If the word Sarah gets erased from chalkboard, you can just write it back up again. But this picture is a treasured thing that could get destroyed. You know, it could get forgotten about. It could get left behind, no pun intended, somewhere. You know, like there is something powerful and profound. Like, I need to protect this thing. And I love that idea. That in the game, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Ellie has the picture. She keeps it, I think, doesn't she?
I think so.
Because she gives it to Joel, and it's one of the collectibles that Joel...
Yeah.
She swiped it, because we know she swiped stuff from Bill. She swiped a magazine from Bill. So she's in the habit of stealing stuff. And in the game, she steals the picture from Tommy's place and then gives it to Joel later on. And he's like, thank you. And it's a beautiful coming of full circle, you know, of how Joel feels. It is the perfect symbolic idea that Joel is comfortable talking about his daughter again. And then they do talk about the daughter.
Yeah.
In this, it's, well, I stole the chalkboard, you know, let's make our own memorial. You know, it's so bad. I don't know. I really, really, really feel that, again, what was so wrong with a photograph? What was so wrong? Like, if Tommy says to you, I went back to Texas a few years back, wow, I want to see that as well. You know, like there's something powerful about that. There's something imaginative about that. Okay, before we run out of time, we got to talk about the Shambler. We got to talk about the clickers and the snipers in the the big bloater, whatever you want to call it. In part two, they're called Shamblers. In part one, they're called bloaters.
Really?
And they still go with the word bloater in the remake, because I was playing it yesterday and I found I thought maybe they would kind of align I'm assuming bloater is a term used by like Boston, for example, or something like that, whereas Shambler might be a term used by Seattle or something. I don't know, but anyway, there is you know, in part one of Kansas, we see like the ground moving. And Perry,
who is plays Tommy.
Yeah,
in the
actor who played Perry in Power One, Kathleen's right hand, is the guy who plays Tommy in the video games. Yeah, and he is brilliant. I mean, what a beard! You know, the assault rifle, and the vest. And he looks amazing. He should just be in like a Call of Duty video game or something.
Yeah,
and he gets his head ripped off by the bloater in exactly the way it happens in the video game. Okay, walk me through. What did you think of that whole scene? That whole play?
Yeah, I'm happy we finally got this idea of the threat that the clickers are, you know, and the bloater. I think. I would like something more with the bloater. Maybe we'll get it. Maybe that was hopefully an introduction and that's not all we get, because I think there's, I mean, we can go back and forth on like where they spend their time on, like, oh, is it the emotional scenes or like the action scenes and, you know, the balance of that. But I would really like to see Joel and Ellie in more of the tight knit spaces like we did in episode three, was it, or two? No, I'm sorry, episode two. And seeing the threat there, but it was nice to actually get that.
Just on that point, I've thought about this. Okay, I think that's really like, I would love to see more of those scenes from episode two. I'd love to see more of the Shamblers and all that. I think they are playing it well. They're finding that balance where we're getting just enough spectacle where it can satisfy that itch that we have for this stuff, but it's also doing it in a way where it feels credible that they're surviving. Because one problem I had with episode two was that Ellie gets bitten again Like she got bitten already, and she got bitten again in episode 2, and it was almost like, well, if you don't believe me, here's more proof, you know? And I was like, well, yeah, the spores were meant to be the proof that she can survive the spores without a gas mask. That was supposed to be the proof she's immune. But okay, fine. Tess is bitten, she's bitten, they're both bitten at the same time. Now you can see, it's like, then why was it important that she was bitten first, you know, prior? You know, like it's, they're getting their, yeah. they mix it up a little, they muddled it a little bit, but it did show that if you have too many encounters with these guys, you're not going to survive. And and so I do feel they've struck a right balance on that. And I did feel, I felt like I was starved of clickers. And then they gave me just, they rolled this feast up to the table, you know, and it was just like, wow. You know?
Which was a great climax to that storyline, and like really bringing Kathleen's world down on her. And saying like, you know, you kind of not that I know if there's anything she could have done, but there was this threat that what you were neglecting that was rising up, and you're like too focused on your personal vendetta.
Yes, that was really that's a good reading.
And
of it,
so so there's, and even just fleshing that out with Kathleen's character gives her more of that arc and a closure to a nice like antagonist.
I love that idea that Fedra were their own undoing because they became too corrupt and too violent and too aggressive and so on. And now these rebels are, you know, are their own downfall as well. And I think it sets this really interesting precedent. Like, what would actually happen if the Fireflies got full control? Would they actually manage to, would they be their own downfall as well? Because that does seem to be the recurring theme in part one and part two, is this idea that
for sure
power does corrupt, you know, and nobody is ever really qualified to be able to navigate this kind of world or run this kind of world, you know, smoothly. Like, so
except for communism, baby.
Yeah.
It's, that was a funny line.
Yeah, it's funny. It is a really, yeah, we're literally a community. We are literally a community-run society. Like, I love the way she just said that, and it was just really...
And he's like, we are communists.
Yeah. And he says it with such disdain. You sound like communists. Yeah. You sound like commies, you know? And then it's... Yeah. And then, like, we're in the 50s or something, and then it's... well, no, we literally are. And I love that. I love that kind of... we're redefining what those terms mean. I thought that was really, really smart, actually. Yeah, like that there isn't, like, yeah.
I guess, so to finish off the point of the clickers and action and the balance that we're getting, I guess what I would like to see is more of what you're getting at with the video game is so action interrupts the small scenes, like the quiet scenes, for gameplay to keep the player entertained. And so I think that using action and the clickers is a good device to interrupt that and to utilize like and elevate the tension and drama. Because I would have loved to have seen all the drama in episode 6 interrupted by a raid or, you know, something that gives us this threat.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, there's this small story going on that, you know, in terms of character, like we're hoping, obviously Joel will make it out of this. But if they don't, like the stakes are, if these characters don't make it out, we will never resolve or develop this small drama going on in the background. So I think that's what I want more out of the action instead of just the spectacle.
I'm all for spectacle. I'm happy with spectacle.
Oh, I love spectacle.
You know, like I'm happy. But... I agree. I know what you mean. Like using it as a functional way. I think in this, I'm just happy to see more clickers. And I think maybe it's because I'm feeling deprived of clickers, but then I know you can't have them that often pop up. Because it becomes too, you guys are just too lucky, you know, at that point.
I think my biggest gripe, because you've had your gripes, my biggest gripe is we have not seen one Shiv. I want some Shivs.
I know. Yeah, that's the thing that I've... Yeah, you've now got me griping. There's nothing from the game coming through here. There's no upgrading. There's no... like, and I'm not saying we need to have those game moments. I'm just saying, wouldn't it be interesting just to have, like, Joel just finding a workshop table? Like, there's a problem with his gun. The sight is off, and he just goes to... he finds his workshop table, and he just tweaks it a little bit while he's talking with Ellie. Like, there's literally a scene where he's looking for a stash box in episode 2, or episode 3 at the beginning, and Ellie is, you know, poking at the clicker on downstairs. I'm like, forget looking for a stash. Just have him, like, at a workshop table doing his thing, and we're like, oh my god, that's what you do in the game. That's what, you know, you're always looking for in a game, is you're looking for supplies and you're trying to upgrade your weapons. Just something like that, just to kind of nod to the game. I don't know, it's meant to be an adaptation of a game, not an adaptation of cutscenes. So I would like a little bit more of that too. Okay, how did you feel about, last point, how did you feel about Joel's injury moment, where, and not just the injury itself at the end of the episode, at the end of the last episode, but the idea of the anticipation of potentially finding the Fireflies at the hospital. Again, my experience of playing the game was, I remember there being this moment where, oh, okay, this is where they're supposed to be. This is where the Fireflies are supposed to be. So, okay, we're going over there. Like, we've actually reached our destination now.
Like, finally, right? I get to this point.
Yeah, like, this was meant to be something the destination, yeah. Correct? Right?
Yeah.
You know, and then there's this disappointment that it's like, oh, they're not here. Maybe they've gone to this place. Oh, okay. We got to now make our way over to this other place. But before we do that, Joel gets injured. I never felt that there was appropriate... I think they did a great job recreating that space, by the way. But I never felt like there was this kind of, wow, we've actually arrived. Like, you have arrived at your destination. Like, I never felt like they bigged that up. Like, this should have been a profoundly disappointing moment for our characters. And it just felt like, huh, you know. Like, it was probably more disappointing that Bill was dead than it was that there's no Fireflies in this place. You know, how did you feel about that? Was that something, am I just reading into it? Am I looking for something that's not there, or what do you think?
I think that we're sacrificing certain things for other things. Cause like we can't get the whole adaptation of the, you know, of everything with the video game. So like where to focus each scene, like we're not gonna, I think I have lost the sense of this journey, with like the scale of it. And I think that's what, like, if we get into genres of video games, it's why I love survival horror, even though this is a little more survival. You get exhausted because you're just like, you're running out of equipment, you're trying to survive and make it through, and it's just one thing after another that's going wrong. Or at least you'll get to the destination to further the story along, because in survival horror, because everything's going wrong, just that little bit of like ticking the mission forward is nice, but it's always the setback and exhausting. And so usually by the time I finish the a game, I'm kind of ready for it to be done. And so I think that there's a sense of accomplishment at each step that we're losing in terms of the switch in medium. And so to then just focus on other elements of the story instead.
I think what I would have liked in that moment is just that they go there, it's disappointing, it's kind of anticlimactic. They say, you know what, we're going to spend the night because maybe they'll come back. Like, maybe there's somebody, like, I don't know, maybe they're gone out hunting. Maybe there's only a few of them left and they've gone out to get food or something like that. Like, maybe they're not here. Like, you've come all this way for this. Don't just make an assumption after 5 minutes and run away.
Yeah.
I know you're being forced out by the raiders, but like,
But immediately after they find
that
spot,
and again, it's
then
contrived.
It's like, oh, the Raiders.
It's all contrived. Yeah. And I think having them sit there, spend, you know, and it's night and it's late or the sun is setting and it's like, I don't think they're coming back. You know, I don't think they're coming back. Like, what do we do, Joel? And then as they're leaving, they realize we're not alone in this hospital. There's somebody else here. And you could even do the thing where, like, this is a hospital, right? Am I right? It's a hospital. Or is it a science lab in a university? If it's a university.
It's a university.
It's massive. The idea that they're alone in this entire university is also a bit mad. They're in the game, there are infected in the university, but we don't see any infected in the show. So imagine, like, you know, it's late and it's getting dark. And then Ellie's like, Joel, what is that? And then you see a light in another building somewhere. And it's like, we're not alone here. Well, what do we do? Okay, well, maybe we go look for people. Okay. And now as they're heading out, they realize, yeah, those people aren't fireflies.
Yeah.
And we got to get out of here. Too late. You've been countered. Another thing that's really important. I don't think he killed enough of those raiders, because killing those raiders is important. Maybe they'll find a way of making it work, but in a future section, that is going to come in a future chapter, that is going to come back to haunt Joel and Ellie. Yeah. You know, that encounter with those raiders.
Yeah.
And
true. Yeah.
In the game, they kill a lot of them. So when a character says, yeah, somebody killed my men, it's like, yeah, I understand. But in this, it's like, well, you know, they got away. I mean, like you guys got off easy, you know. So it doesn't feel like that much of a loss, you know. So I don't know. I'm feeling like we'll save that for the next episode, next conversation. But I am feeling like as great as episode five and six was, or four and five was in Kansas, I didn't feel like episode seven landed. Or episode seven had the responsibility of taking a lot of heavy moments in this story and adapting them and really like translating them properly on screen. And I don't think it did a good enough job of it.
Yeah. I think in our conversation in both of these episodes, the point where I've got to is like they're hitting the big moments, like they're doing those really well, like Bill and Henry and Sam. The thing that I'm missing is the level of care with the smaller stuff, action, everything that we've talked about, the weight of like getting to places and failing. It feels almost like they're like, well, we got to write this into the last part of this episode to get us to Joel. The cliffhanger of Joel being stabbed, you know, instead of, you know, adding in some of like of the ideas that you're talking about of making us feel that and like and those twists of like, oh, are these the fireflies? No. instead of just getting somewhere and then, OK, we're moving on to the next thing.
Because that is adaptation. Adaptation is literally changing something so it can survive in another medium or another environment. Okay. And this is not, for the most part, this is not adaptation. It's copy and paste. And I love the authenticity of it, the fidelity of it. But fidelity to the source is, in almost all cases of poor adaptation, the problem. And I think there are parts of, I think this is a 50-50 split. Of great creative decision making to make otherwise underexplored moments come alive. Henry and Sam being the key example, Kansas City, who's running it, all that stuff, Bill and Frank, etc. Then there is the stuff that doesn't really need adaptation because it just works. Tess's death, you know, Left Behind, which we'll talk about in the next session, I think works perfectly as is.
Yeah.
Sarah's death, etc. Then there's the stuff that needs to be earned. You have to work towards it, you know, such as Joel's injury, the disappointment of not finding fireflies, and Ellie's and Joel's argument, which for me doesn't land. And I think that is how I would summarize the success and failure rate of the different aspects of this show. I think what I'm coming to in all of these discussions is, how are they adapting this? I'm not interested in is it a good show? Yeah, it's a good show, no question. For me, it's how are they adapting this? Because this is an interesting area of discussion for me. That's how I feel about it. Final thoughts?
Yeah, I think I hit everything that I could think of, like as far as adapting. I'm interested to see. I never actually played Left Behind. I know the story. I never came around to it. So I'm interested to see my experience with that first in the series, and then I will go and play.
Go play it in the game. Go play it in the game. It will hit you like a ton of bricks. The show will hit you like a ton of bricks, I think, but
yeah,
not the same. It won't be as effective, I think. That's my feeling on it. I'm not that kind of guy who says, oh, read the book first or anything like that. It's fine. But I do feel, having looked at both of them, as much as I think Left Behind works, there are some surprises that, or some stuff that I think they want to be surprising in it, that work because they're a bit more unexpected in the video game.
We're 2/3 of the way through this, so we have 3 more episodes. So I'm interested to see, do we feel like we're far enough along in the story for this to be over? You know,
I think we know what we're getting now. Bar a few left turns, right turns here and there, unexpected turns from an adaptation point of view. I think we know what we're getting. I think audiences kind of know where this is going as well, even if you haven't played the game. You might not know how this is going to end, but I think you have an idea of what to expect. We'll leave it there, Caleb. Thanks very much, guys. As always, do subscribe to the channel, the podcast, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, wherever you find us. Leave us a review. Let us know how you feel about the show. You can do that in the YouTube comments. Check out what our community are doing on the scriptdepartment.net. Buy us a coffee as well. All the links are in the description. Thanks very much, everyone. Thanks, Caleb.